She survived war, sexual assault, and the weight of nearly 300 pounds. Now she's using her story to heal others. Dani Shine, a Desert Storm Army veteran and author of The Weight of Hidden Wounds, takes us on a raw and redemptive journey through trauma, recovery, and reclaiming her voice. This isn't just a story of survival. It's a masterclass in resilience. Welcome to Season 5 of Dog Tag Diaries, where the untold stories of military women take center stage. I'm your host, Captain Kim, and we are in our fifth season. 5 seasons of truth, grit, laughter, healing, and connection. To every storyteller who shared a piece of their soul, and every listener who's walked alongside us, thank you. You're the reason this podcast has grown into a movement. Let's keep breaking silence, building community, and amplifying the voices that deserve to be heard. Let's dive in. Today's guest is a force of resilience and truth. Joining us from Bend, Oregon is Dani Shine, Army veteran, retired RN, and author of The Weight of Hidden Wounds. Dani made history as one of the first women to undergo infantry training back in 1987. Her journey through war, military sexual trauma, and decades-long battle with PTSD and weight gain led her to healing not only her body, but her mind and spirit. She's a trauma recovery advocate, a proud mom and grandma, and a woman who speaks fluent chicken. What? Yes, really, fluent chicken. Through her story, Dani reminds us that healing is messy, but it's worth every step. Get ready for an honest, powerful conversation about survival, recovery, and the courage to finally speak out. Dani Shine, welcome to Dog Tag Diaries.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. It's exciting.
And this is your first podcast ever.
Yes, first podcast ever. I am a virgin podcaster.
Yes, you're going to be an expert in podcasting after this one with Dog Tag Diaries. Thanks for choosing us. So let's dive in. Let's hear about how Dani Shine was as a kid.
Dani Shine as a kid. So I was never clean. I mean, I was always out there. I have an older brother, so I always wanted to be like my older brother. So whatever he was doing, I was doing. And my grandparents had a farm. So we were always over there riding horses, riding dirt bikes, doing stuff we shouldn't have been doing probably as kids, but we did it anyway.
Where did you grow up with this farm and dirt biking?
I was born in Springfield, Oregon. So I'm an Oregonian through and through. So we moved over to Bend when I was 10.
Oh, wow. Like you're a true Bendite.
Yeah, true Bendite. Yeah, we're like unicorns. There's not very many of us anymore.
No. Okay. So you were like this tomboyish, wanted to be like your brother type little girl. And did you have family members in the military?
My Uncle John, so my dad's brother was in the military. He was in the Army. And I had some uncles, but my dad was not in the military. My uncle, my mom's brother, he was also a Marine, but was medically discharged because he has Addison's disease. So yeah, that was kind of the first like female for sure.
Yeah. Is that how you discovered the military?
No. Funny story. So we grew up not super rich. You know, we were just poor kids. My mom was a cook for the high school. My dad was a parts guy at the mill when the mill was the mill here and not the old mill. And so I wanted to go to college. All my friends were talking about college and I didn't have any money. So I thought, hey, the Army has the college fund. So went investigating and took the ASVAB and scored really high. And they're like, oh, well, do whatever you want to do.
So what MOS did you pick?
So I picked 88 November. They wanted me to go into helicopter repair, which in hindsight, I totally wish I would have done that. That would have been so cool. But instead, I chose logistics, basically. And so troop movement, getting troops over, equipment over, ammo, food, all the things.
All the essentials that soldiers need to survive.
Totally. And then convoys. We did a lot of convoys and how to route out convoys and all that stuff to make sure you're going to the right places, not damaging things, which just can be hard when you have tanks and all the stuff that we had.
Yeah. Okay. So you were in logistics. And where did you go to basic training?
I got the pleasure of going to basic in Fort McClellan, Alabama, Ooh. Which for a Bend, Oregon girl, talk about culture shock. It's like intense, hot, red clay. I mean, all these, I didn't know anything about any of that stuff. And the diversity, we just didn't have any diversity in Bend back in those days.
Yeah. Well, thank God they keep you so busy with mission driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. That you don't even really know where you are half the time. You're like, okay, you get your paperwork and they're like, you're going to go to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri or to Alabama. And you're like, okay.
Okay, here we go.
And then where was your AIT?
AIT was at Fort Eustis in Virginia. I think it was like 9 weeks. Then I went to Germany for 2 years, which I loved Germany. That was really great. I traveled all over. I was 19. I mean, just got on the train and just went everywhere. I mean, I flew on the, we were by the Ramstein Air Force Base there because I was in Kaiserslautern. And you could just take a military hop for $10. So I would go all over the place. It was so cheap.
Do you have a favorite thing that you did over there?
Heidelberg, Germany is my favorite place in the entire world.
And why is that?
The food, the people, it's like kind of a university feel. I mean, it's just, it's right on the river. The castle looms in the background. It's just beautiful. I mean, I couldn't write a better storybook setting than Heidelberg. Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, okay. Well, when you were in Germany for 2 years with the army, what was your mission there?
So mission there was to work with all of the locals. So the German nationals. So we would coordinate with them, like train schedules. I did that for the first year, like trying to get all the convoys. I mean, the roads are so small. So we had to like look at logistically, how is this going to work? How's this going to fit? So worked very closely with the German nationals, which was hard too because of the language barrier. But we made it. We did it. And then they found out that I knew how to type. They put me in the commo shop, which was, they gave me a book that was like as thick as like the old Webster dictionaries. Like, I mean, we're talking like 6 to 8 inches. And they're like, okay, the system we're going to use now, you need to learn it and then teach everybody. And I'm like, excuse me? Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Danny, for a 19-year-old female.
Yeah, right.
From Oregon, going over to Germany, having this job of trying to cross-train, right? Is that what you were doing with this German soldiers? And you didn't have a translator.
No. It was so hard. It was so hard.
What was that all like?
Oh my God, it was so stressful at times. I finally knew that I did an okay job when my German national came to my work and gave me a wine and cheese basket.
Oh, is that what they do? Is that what they do for you?
I made it.
That had to feel so good for you at 19.
It really did. It was really nice. I'll never forget his name. He was Reinhardt.
What's his drinking age over there?
As long as you can reach the bar. Oh. So, yeah, we had some fun. We had some good times over there.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But you also have this other side of you where you were one of the first women to go into combat training.
Yeah, and we didn't know at the time. So when I got to Fort McClellan, Alabama, I was in Bravo Company at 2nd 48th Infantry Battalion. And I had no idea that that was anything unusual because I didn't know. I'm just a kid. I have no idea. So we went through all of the training that the guys would go through for infantry. And I get, after we graduated, like at our ceremony where I had to write a speech because I got the outstanding platoon guide of the cycle, I had to write a speech for like 3,000 people that I didn't know. So yeah, that was a little intimidating. But then they said, yes, congratulations. You were a test to see if women could actually endure the requirements for infantry, and you passed. You guys passed.
Well, thank you for paving the way for us.
Heck yeah. It was a pleasure. It was fun.
They still weren't letting women perform those combat tasks though yet, were they?
No, which was interesting because I'm sure we'll touch about that later. But when I was in the Persian Gulf, they were saying we were not in combat, which was crap because, I mean, we were getting bombed every night. I don't know any more combat than that. And then when I went on took a convoy myself, volunteered to go take some food and water to the Kuwaiti citizens, had some experiences. And that was like, okay, how am I not in combat? And they still to this day do not recognize me as a combat veteran.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, what?
Okay, well, let's talk about that. So you were in Alabama, then you went to Germany. How did you get to the Persian Gulf?
So I was reassigned after 2 years of Germany to Fort Lewis in Washington State, which was awesome because I was going to be able to come home, see everybody. And it rained all the time at Fort Lewis, but I didn't care because I could travel home and see everybody on the weekend and all that stuff. But about, I would say, 6 months into my new assignment, then we were put on alert because that's when everything started heating up in the Middle East. So that's when Saddam started doing his crazy. And so then we went over there. We got deployed September of 1990. So then we had to go over there and then coordinate all the troops going over, all of the equipment going over. So we brought people over by plane, by ships. I mean, we used everything that we could possibly imagine as logistics. That's what you do. So that was kind of intense. It was hard. It was a lot of work. But then once we got everybody over there staged, ready, prepped, and then boom, all of a sudden the war starts. And it was a fast war, but it's still, they talk about it being fast, but I'm like, we were still being bombed before and after.
Not for the people over there, it wasn't fast.
No.
No.
It's not fast. Nothing happens fast.
Okay. What was your rank when you got assigned over there?
I was a specialist and they actually promoted me to corporal. So I was E4. Every time I wanted to go to get my NCO, they would like defer me or reassign me or send me on a mission or something. So I don't know that they wanted me to have any more rank.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, do you know why?
No, I've always been the kind of person who I speak my mind, sometimes to a fault. And maybe they didn't want that, or maybe they didn't want me making waves. I don't know. That's always how I felt, like they were trying to keep me down.
Yeah, I don't think that's popular in the military, females trying to speak their truth.
No, they definitely don't foster that.
No, but that's why you're on here. You get to tell your story.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Okay, so you're over in the Persian Gulf. They're bombing you. The war starts. Like, what were you feeling through all that?
It was so crazy. I remember I was being at headquarters. We were on guard duty because we had to do that. And I was like, oh, I get to call my parents. And my parents knew more about what was going on because of the news than I did. And mom said, oh, a TV reporter, or no, Ben Bulletin came over and interviewed us because you're the first woman from Central Oregon to go over to the Persian Gulf. And I was like, oh, I had no idea. So that was kind of cool, different.
Wow, Dani, you're a lot of firsts.
Yeah, really weird. Yeah, I guess so. Never really thought about it, but yeah.
Yeah, which is amazing. That's another thing to put on your resume.
True, yes. I didn't think about that. Yeah, it is. It's pretty cool. So mom and dad got to hold up my picture and at my house where I grew up on the west side in Bend. It was kind of cool. They sent me a copy of it. That was pretty neat.
Yeah, and I bet they were super worried about you though.
Yes, my mom could not talk on the phone. She was always in tears. And so I would talk to my dad. I'd just kind of give him a rundown. You know, I'm good, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they're still bombing us. I don't really know what's going on. And dad would tell me what they've heard. And I'm like, could be not. I don't know. They don't tell us anything. And we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have computers. So you just follow the chain of command. That's all you do. You do what they tell you.
But it had to be super scary for you too. So like, let's talk about all those emotions.
Yeah. I think it's in the very beginning, it was so, I mean, we had trained for that. That's what we trained for. And they were training us like every day for long periods of time about chemical warfare, because we didn't know if Saddam Hussein was going to have chemicals when he was bombing. So we had to wear our mop gear over there all day, all night. It was awful. But then you get to a point where you kind of have to numb out or you're not going to make it. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, all these emotions are not serving me. It's depleting me. So it's like, I got to stuff that crap down in order to move on and get the mission done. And that's kind of what you have to do. You go into survival mode, I guess is a good word.
Just for the viewers, the mop gear is to protect you and is heavy, is to protect you about NBC, nuclear, biological, or chemical warfare. And you're wearing your gas mask on your hip at all times, which you have to don in Is it 7 seconds?
We were in our mass for hours on end because so the alarms would go off and then you'd have to gear up full gear, full mop gear, and then still do your job. And it's like, you can't breathe in those stupid things, you know, and you're trying to drink water through the little straw and then you have to go to the bathroom. I'm like, good luck. Basically, it's a charcoal lined suit and it was 120, 130 degrees over there.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. I wanted to paint the picture of what it was really like for people listening with you. You're in 120 degrees. You're in your mop suit, which makes it probably like 180, 200 in there with your respirator gear on.
Yeah. It was awful. Yeah. And it was like, you couldn't keep enough water in you. I mean, we would get assigned a case of water a day and we would drink it. But I mean, I would still feel dehydrated. It was horrible. Yeah. Miserable.
I could see you like, even it brings it right back up for you.
Oh yeah. I'm like, I feel it in my chest, you know, like the heaviness of like trying to breathe in that stupid thing. And then I have a weird story. I don't know why this just popped into my head, but one of the nights that the alarms were blaring, we had a safety warehouse. So we all go to the safety warehouse, which I'm like, in my head, I'm like, a warehouse? How is that safe? It's aluminum. It's going to cave. So the bomb hit right close to us. Everything's fire, smoke, everything's falling down around us. And we're sitting in this stupid warehouse. And I see a cat walk by. And I thought, if a cat's alive, there's no way there's chemicals out there, which was good and bad because then we still had to sit in our mop gear. But I was thinking, okay, well, this is a plus. There is an animal or a creature that survived.
Yeah. Attention to detail. That's what they teach you. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I just remember it being so bizarre. Like, wow, I'm focusing on this cat that's walking by the front of the warehouse when I should be stressed out about my life ending. And I'm like, oh, well, there's hope.
Oh, that's where you found hope.
That's where I found hope.
Oh, Danny. Okay.
Because I've always been an animal lover, love animals. My dog is actually in here with me laying on the bed.
Oh, what's his name?
Her name is Storm for Desert Storm, actually.
Oh, her name's Storm. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, she's a cutie. She's my battle buddy. We went through training and yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you went through some hard times.
Yes.
With some sexual assault. Are you ready to talk about that?
Yeah, I have done a lot of work around that because for, let's just say 30 years, I did not even believe that I had been assaulted. In my mind, it was my fault. I think a lot of women do that. Maybe I shouldn't have been there. I shouldn't have had that beer, whatever. Insert whatever you say to yourself to get through it. I shouldn't have dressed like that. I mean, like jeans and a t-shirt are sexy, whatever. We all say the weirdest things. But I remember, so I've been going to the vet center. I was in counseling for 7 years at the vet center here in Bend. And my counselor was explaining what assault was. Any unwanted action or expression or words or anything like that. And then she asked anybody in the room, have you ever had that? And it like hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't want any of those things to happen to me. Like in basic training was the first time it happened. A chick crawled into my bunk and like started running her hands up and down my legs. And so I beat the shit out of her and threw her on the ground and two drill sergeants had to pull me off of her. And that was in, I think it was the don't ask, don't tell era. So they asked me what I wanted to do. And I'm like, well, I want her kicked out. I mean, I'm not going to be able to trust this person. And that's what this teamwork is about, right? You got to know that these people have your backs. And I'm like, I don't trust her. I wouldn't trust her in a foxhole with me. No way. So that was the first incident. And that I just chalked up to, I don't know, she was just crazy. But they're like, that's assault. And I'm like, it is? I have no idea, which is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when I was in Germany, a fellow soldier, I was at a party. He was an acquaintance. I didn't really know him well. And he assaulted me and he was leaving. He was like, his ETS date had come up. And so I just kind of was like, nobody said anything. You didn't feel like it was a safe place to share your story. And I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to single myself out because I already felt like I had to work twice as hard because I was a woman. And then if I would have reported it, then it would have been even worse. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to bury that shit, which I did. And then the third one was my actual, I was in a small detachment in the Persian Gulf War of transportation people and someone who was in charge of me, who assaulted me when we got home. And it was more of a coercive tactic. which so like, if you don't do this, I will tell them this, or you won't be able to get out of the military. And I'd already been involuntarily extended 6 months and I really was done. I just wanted out. I just want to go home. I just want this to be done. So I didn't say anything. So that's why I'm doing this now.
I'm glad you're telling your story because far too often, so many military women, including myself, we don't say anything. And then it just gets stuffed down and trapped in our bodies and then manifests in so many different ways. And like you were talking about, your PTS, your weight gain, because we'll do anything to feed that trauma that's stuck.
Yeah, and keep stuffing it down. I literally was stuffing it down with food, with alcohol, with whatever I could. Like I was a workaholic. So as a nurse, I would pick up every shift I possibly could because any downtime, I was afraid I was going to think about it. So I would just keep myself so busy and it was exhausting. It was just absolutely exhausting. Yeah. So I ended up gaining 300. Well, I was 300 pounds. So I gained like 160 pounds over, I'd say 20 years probably.
Okay. So you exited the military in what year?
I exited in 1991.
And then you started nursing?
I went to University of Oregon, actually. So I'm a duck. I went to the U of O to get exercise and movement science because I wanted to be a physical therapist. But then after dealing with hips and knees for a while, I decided that that wasn't as exciting. But the best thing that I did like about exercise and movement science was like the training aspect. So I was working in the sports lab at the U of O with like the track stars and then helping duck football players put together workout schedules and weight training and all that stuff. Loved it. That was my jam. That was like the best job I ever had. Then I graduated, got married. He was my longtime boyfriend and he was also in the military and he was a LRP. So long range reconnaissance and a sniper. So he came home with some baggage. I had baggage that I was not willing to confront yet. And we got married and we had a child and we tried to make it work, but it did not work. So when my kiddo was 18 months old, I ended up moving back to Bend. But in the interim, I had gone to school at Montana State. That's where I got my degree for nursing. Because when I went to Montana, because he was a wildland firefighter, the physical therapy department, they already had their people. I got a B in physics. They wanted me to get an A. I'm like, ugh, I barely got a B. There's no way. So I went to nursing because I'd already been a certified nursing assistant for 3 years. Why not get paid a little bit more for doing what I'm already doing? So that's kind of how I got into nursing. And then I just ended up loving it. I loved nursing. And so I was cardiac nurse for a while, did the ER for a while in Montana. And then when I moved back to Bend with my child, who was 18 months old, I worked in the X-ray department and also in the endoscopic department. So medical diagnostics. So we did endoscopic nursing, colonoscopies, bronchoscopies. And I love the technical aspect because that's my brain. I love a challenge. I love technicalities. The bedside nursing was hard for me sometimes. You know, I think everybody had to do it. It's kind of like boot camp of nursing. So I did some floor time and then I was like, I need something a little faster paced. Endoscopic nursing was it because it was procedural. So 2 hours, 3 hours max, and you'd move on. So
I think nursing's a great career because I'm an RN too. And you have so many different specialties.
Totally. And if you get tired of one or burned out from one, try something else.
Yes.
There's so many. It's amazing.
And us being ER nurses and ICU, that's a big burnout specialty. Lots of trauma.
I was really sad when I had to medically retire because my PTS got so bad that my memory suffered. And I was horrified that I would make a med error or kill somebody. In good conscience, I can no longer be a nurse. I can't do this. So then I went through the whole, well, who am I if I'm not a nurse? That was my whole identity. And so then I started writing my book just to kind of have an outlet to vent. And then it turned into very a therapeutic outlet. And then I'm like, well, this is kind of nursing in a different way. So that's kind of how I looked at it. Like, oh, well, I still want to help people. And maybe by writing this, I can help people.
I love that you were doing this for yourself and other people. Like you were going to therapy because you knew you had some trauma, a lot of trauma, sexual assault from the war, from the things that you saw that you're just not supposed to see. Your brain can't even comprehend.
Yeah, humans.
Yeah. So Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about that then. So when did you realize that you had PTS?
So I was in the procedure one day and I was sedating the patient. It was dark in there. And all of a sudden, I didn't believe in PTS and I did not believe in, I thought it was crap. Honestly, I'm just going to be honest. I thought that was like something that people make until it happened to me and I had a flashback. So the floor actually turned to sand and the doctor was using cautery, which was the burns flush smell, which is the smell that I smelled going through the highway of death on the way to Kuwait with all the overturned cars and all the bodies and all these things. And I was right back there. And so I was like, wait. And then the doctor's like, you don't look good. You know, are you okay? And then I kind of was able to like, holy shit, I'm at work. I need to focus. I need to, you know, I've got a patient. Oh my God. So I rallied and yeah, I'm okay. Got the patient out of the room. And I immediately ran outside and sat down and just started bawling. And I was like, what? I am going crazy. What is going on with me? I had no idea. No idea what was going on.
You said that perfectly. When you don't understand post-traumatic stress, you feel like you're crazy.
Yeah, I've totally felt like I was losing it. I'm like, I am certifiably crazy. I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. And so how did you figure out, was it through therapy that your therapist?
Well, my child at the time, I have three kids, my youngest. So I have two stepkids and my biological child is a queer non-binary. So goes by they, them, assigned female at birth. And Ashton was having some trouble with school, diagnosed with ADHD and anxiety and depression. And so on top of all my own crap, I was like, oh my gosh, how can I help my kid? I need to help my kid. So I went to a specialist for ADHD in Bend and she wanted to know, I said, I think probably Ashton gets it from me. And so the therapist said, well, let's dig into your past a little bit. Like, were you good in school? And I'm like, well, they kind of wanted me to move up. I was a tag kid. Talented and gifted. They wanted me to move a year up and da da da. And she said, well, what did you do after that? So I went into my story about the military and I said, I joined the army and then I ended up going to the Persian and I couldn't, it froze. My throat, I could not say the words. And let me tell you, that's never been something that has happened to me because I can always talk. As a nurse, you're trained to talk. So this first time I was speechless and I was shaking, I was red. Bawling. I had no idea what was going on. And so this poor lady handled it beautifully, was like, let's talk about your childhood. Let's go back to that. Talk about your family. So then I was like, okay, my family, you know, because they've always been a huge support system. So I calmed down. And then at the end of the session, she said, I don't think you have ADHD. I think you have PTSD. And I was like, no, you're wrong. And I got in my car and I drove to my parents' house and I said, this crazy therapist thinks that I have PTSD. And my mom and dad were like, well, you never really talk about what you did over there or anything with the army. And I'm like, what? Because in my head, I'm reliving it all the time. So I thought I was talking about it all the time. And nobody even, like my kids, my stepkids were like, we knew you were in the army. We didn't know what you did. I never said anything. My coworkers didn't even know I was in the military. I mean, how crazy is that?
Well, yeah. I mean, trying to discuss it with people, I mean, you would have to have your own troops to talk about it with. And a lot of times they don't want to relive it. But if you talk about it to a civilian or somebody that wasn't over there, they're going to be like, "What? I don't want to hear this. I don't need to hear this. You're scaring me."
It is scary. Yeah, it is a lot. I agree. Yeah.
Okay. So you got a therapist here.
Yeah.
And was that helpful for you?
Oh my gosh. So I have been blown away with the quality of therapists here in Bend. Let me just start with that, especially at the vet center. They are phenomenal. I ended up going to the vet center, but this is my favorite saying because my therapist still quotes me on this. Because like for the first 2 years, I was just an ass in a seat. I was not doing the work.
Oh.
I was just listening, but not doing.
Yeah.
So when I ended up becoming suicidal, which was definitely not me. I'm like, I know this is not me. I need help. I ended up going away to a trauma recovery program in California, in Palo Alto.
Was it specifically for veterans?
Yes, women veterans, because they didn't have anything in Oregon that was just for women. So I sought this one out. because they did prolonged exposure therapy, which is what I felt like I needed to get over all of the horrible things that happened when I was with the bodies on the highway. I stepped on a landmine that didn't explode. I mean, it was like this horrific day. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. So I went and did all of my combat stuff, not knowing that under all of these things that I had already lived through, there was this deeper level of sexual trauma, because it's easier to handle the combat stuff. And it's easier. It's like, yeah, I'll deal with that, because that, and then once you open it up and you have space, oh, lo and behold, this other stuff rises up. And I'm like, damn, I thought I was done.
I thought I did the work. Why is this happening?
Why is this happening? And it's like the onion theory. You keep peeling the onion back. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So yeah, that's what I've been doing the last, I would say, 3 years, mostly is focusing on the sexual trauma. Yeah, because there was a time when I couldn't even talk about it at all. It just was so visceral that, I mean, I would want to puke. I couldn't even, I was like, oh, I couldn't get the words out. But now it's like, nope, you know what? None of that was my fault. And I am ready to talk about it. And I want other people to talk about it. And I don't want it to be in the shadows anymore. No shame, no guilt, no blame. Just let's talk about it.
Is all that in your book?
Yes.
Ooh, you're so brave. Thank you for writing about that and talking about that, because so many people are listening to this. And again, there was a time where I didn't want to deal with that either. But just like you, when you're like, it's not my fault and I'm not going to live like this anymore. I need to get it out from in here, from inside.
Yes. It's toxic. You got to get it out.
Yeah, it's toxic.
Thank you. It is toxic.
So you wrote the book. It was therapy for you. It was helpful to other women. Like, how did you decide to write the book and get it published?
So I've been working on this thing for 7 years, and this thing has morphed so many times. It's had so many different names and has morphed so many times. And being a nurse, this is a new territory. I'm not an author. I am now, because I have written a book, but I was not previously. So it's like, I have no idea the publishing world. So I'm querying to get an agent, because I'm going the traditional route, because I think it's an important story for people, not necessarily just sexual trauma, but anyone who has trauma. I mean, and so many people have it and don't even know they have it. I mean, I was clueless and a medical professional and I still didn't recognize my own thing. You know, it's like,
yeah. And don't you look back too as a medical professional and go, how did I not see this?
Exactly. Like there were some glaring signs, like, hello. How did you not see that?
Yeah. Well, you have a great quote. You have the quote, we don't need to be perfect to be powerful. Healing is messy, but it's ours. Where did you come up with that? Because that's genius.
Well, my journey has been messy. It has not been pretty at all. But the way I view it is the messier you get, the more you gain from it, I guess. So get messy, get dirty, because that's the only way you're going to be able to grow. Is you gotta go to the places you don't want to go. And that is messy and that's ugly. But some beautiful things can come out of that. So I guess that's kind of where that came from. I'm like, power is in the mess. You know, it really is. Cause I used to be I think as a nurse, you can appreciate this, very type A, still am. I mean, used to be like I'm a recovering. No. Very type A.
We're a lighter dose of type A. How about that?
But I think that was hard for me because I wanted to control everything. This is something you can't control. So let it get messy, because eventually you'll be on the other side of it. And then you can get a little bit of the control back. You're never going to. And that's where I'm at. I'm like, control's an illusion. I've actually accepted that. But I still choose to live my life with some guidance and some structure, because that's how I thrive.
I love that. And let's talk about the beauty that's in your life now.
Oh my gosh.
You jazzercise.
I just called Ron and said, I'm sweating with the oldies.
I'm coming over right now and doing it with you.
Oh my God, you need to come. There's a special going on right now. You need to come. So I go 4 times a week and then I swim 1 day a week. And then on the other 2, usually I'm just doing work at home around the yard, because I love to garden, because I find that very therapeutic, talking about messy, getting dirty. Because like I said, I've always loved to be in the dirt. And my chickens, I have a new passion of chickens. I have 10 girls. Well, Shakira is one of my new little ones, might be Chuck. So I might have a transgender chicken. I'm not sure. Yeah. So it's all good.
I love that you were brave enough to step into this journey of recovery and really face all the things that you've done, because wartime is no joke. The things you see is no joke. The things that happen to you, the sexual assault, no joke. And being so brave as to really being able to dive into all those horrible memories just takes so much bravery. And now you have like your chickens and your jazzercise and your gardening and a supportive system. Your husband of how many years?
Oh my God. So this weekend on Flag Day, it will be 17 years. We've been together 20.
That's fantastic.
And he is amazing. I am so lucky to have this man in my life because he has been through so much with me. I mean, when we got married, I didn't know that I had this. So I almost felt like it was false advertisement. But this guy is like the best. He's just like, do what you got to do to make yourself feel better and get better. That's all I really want is for you to be happy. And I'm like, well, I want to be happy so I can be a better wife, a better mom, a better person, a better human.
Congratulations on all of that. And we just have to switch because we only have like 3 minutes left. We could talk forever, I know. But
oh, yeah, you and I, we got to go to lunch.
Okay, so to end the interview, we ask what you would tell other military women, what advice you would give them.
I think there are some amazing things that you can get from service. I still have friends that I'm in contact with today that, I mean, they have my back. They always will. I could call them and say, hey, I need help. They will be there in a heartbeat. No questions asked. And so I think that type of family and camaraderie can be amazing. It comes with a price. It's tough. It is hard. It's hard work. Women still are not treated the same. And I think it's getting better, but I still think we have a long way to go. But I still think you could get a lot of really, really valuable things from the military. I mean, it helped me grow up a lot. But to be wary and to be strong, be brave. And if something does happen, be brave and tell people. That's why I want to start the conversation. I mean, I know we've started it years ago, but it's like, we need to get some change. We need it to be okay to have reporting and not have the victim get kicked out of the Army or dishonorably discharged or whatever, because at the time, that's what would have happened to me. And that is so horrible. So I want that to change. I think I would recommend it to people who need structure. I mean, it is. And there are some valuable job skills out there that you can get from the military. And I did get college money. So there is that. But yeah, I think it's tough. It's not easy and it's not for everybody. That's for sure. But if you want a challenge.
Well, thank you. Well, Danny, you are a beautiful, powerful source. And just taking on that journey, I do. I just really, really appreciate you. And I appreciate you writing the book so that other women can understand and feel like they're not alone. So thank you again for being on Dog Tag Diaries.
Oh, thank you for having me. This has been amazing.
That's a wrap on today's episode of Dog Tag Diaries. As we head deeper into season 5, I'm more grateful than ever for this community, for the raw, brave stories shared and the hearts they reach. If something spoke to you today, pass it on. Leave a review, share with a sister in arms, because healing is contagious, and so is hope. Until next time, keep speaking your truth, and remember, you're not alone.